This hour of First Up, powered by Manscaped.
Count it up, count it up, count it up, count it.
First Up continues on this long weekend Friday morning. Aaron Karolnik and Matthew Kaws with you. Robin Lundberg from Sports Illustrated. He'll join us in about 15 minutes time. And the name J. Cole does not often come up in conversations, whether it's on TSN 1050 or any sports radio station. We know he's a huge basketball fan, a really quality basketball player, at least as far as rap artists go. But there was some major news yesterday, Matthew, courtesy of our man Shams Charania, as he announced.
Good for you. Good for you for saying that.
Maybe we could find the Nicole Iacovo screwing up Shams' name, which is a clip I enjoy immensely. I will play that for you in just a second. But J. Cole, who played professionally, and I use that in a very loose term, and this is not an indictment on the CEBL, the Canadian Elite Basketball League, but I mean, it's not the NBA. I think we know that. And I don't think J. Cole's capable of playing in the NBA, but he signed a deal with the Scarborough Shooting Stars of the CEBL yesterday. And by all accounts, it sounds like he's going to be playing for Scarborough in the CEBL. And Jamal McGlure is a special advisor for that team. He'll join the boys on Overdrive today at 5:30. But for a artist of that magnitude, like, I would argue that J. Cole is one of the top 15 artists on the planet right now as far as popularity goes, maybe higher. I mean, he's not Drake, he's not Bieber, but he's probably in the next tier below. And the fact that he's going to be playing basketball in Scarborough is a remarkable thing for the province and for the CEBL, Matt.
Well, I think the CEBL right now has got a big crooked smile on its face about J. Cole coming to their league. And I know that Charles Barkley says, hey, there are no role models in basketball, but J. Cole coming to Scarborough is a really big deal. And this is a true story. No false prophets with this news out there. And I know for some people, they're going to say this guy's on a real power trip to try to play professional basketball. I say let this guy work out and live his dream.
That was incredible. And if you didn't pick up on what Matthew just did, thank you very much. The studio audience also in agreement. You just use a ton of J. Cole songs in sentences. How did you do that off the cuff?
Well, you know what? I know we are in the morning, but apparently I am
that's a good
very
song with Drake.
Good. I'm very good when it comes to improv. Hey, listen, nobody's perfect. I might not have known who J. Cole was 3.5 hours ago. Did I Google his big hits? Hey, listen. Pride is the devil. The pride is in me, my man, because I've now gone over all of his top songs, and now I'm done. I think I've just said all his song titles, so
that's
it for me.
So I wonder like how that all comes to be, and I'm very curious to hear the interview with Jamal McGlure. Again, that's at 5:30 p.m. on Overdrive, and J. Cole in playing for Scarborough is just... And it's kind of a weird situation. My guess is there's some Drake tie-in at some point there where it just, I'm sure J. Cole and Drake are friends. I mean, two of the top artists on the planet. And we know Drake's presence in Canadian basketball with the Raptors and by extension, I guess, the CEBL. So J. Cole and the Scarborough Shooting Stars. That should be something very, very interesting to track.
Absolutely. Super cool and great for that league. You know, just, so, as we said before, get all your attention.
So Marcus Smart, we were talking about it earlier, makes his return to the Boston Celtics lineup last night as 24 points, 9 boards, 12 assists. A true difference maker for Boston. I mean, you look at the result in Game 1 where they lose handily, and they win handily in Game 2. He talked yesterday post-game, and he was feeling himself. He was feeling himself, and rightfully so. He had a huge game, too. Here's Marcus Smart post-game on his return to the Celtics lineup.
It's a different type of energy and feel when, you know, when I'm out there on the court able to bark out the commands and really get into my guys and get them motivated. Because now it's like, okay, you know, if he's going to go out there and do it, I don't want to be the guy to slack. And so I got to come with it. And that's the beauty of having me on the court to do that, to settle us down, to get us what we need to do and make plays for my teammates.
Love that.
You could see the reaction. Like there, Marcus Smart started off by not shooting the ball well, 2 of 11, but had like 7 assists, no turnovers in the first half. But he hit this one crazy shot where the ball went a little bit over the backboard and in, and the bench went nuts. When he broke Max Strus's ankles and then hit like a mid-range jumper, the entire Celtics bench, again, was flipping out. He's not the best player. He's not even the second best player, but I think he's the emotional heartbeat of that team. You know, and we're talking about him more than Jason Tatum, who had 27 points, but because of the blowout, it killed me. My Tatum would have 30 or more, and the Celtics win. That on FanDuel, that should have paid off. He had 27, and they pulled him because they're up by 30. But yeah, like Marcus Smart provides that third option that Boston needs offensively, and we know what the Celtics, their issues on offense are. In the half court, it slows down, and we've seen it. We saw in the playoffs a bunch this year, but it didn't happen. And the three-point shooting, they shot 12 of 19 for three at the end of the first half. Game over. They're up by 25. See you game three.
And that's it. And that's it. I cannot wait for game three tomorrow night. It's at 8:30. You can see it on TSN. And we'll see how that plays out. We'll see how the Golden State-Dallas game two plays out. Another blowout in game one. I'm really hoping we see a lot more from Luka Doncic, who I feel is one of, if not the most exciting players in the NBA. I think he and Steph Curry are right there at the top as far as players I like to tune and watch. And fortunately for us, we'll be blessed with both tonight. That game going at 9 o'clock. A little bit later, Matt, we've got game two in the Battle of Alberta.
And 90 Daryl minutes Sutter, later. 90 yeah, minutes later.
10:30 start for the Battle of Alberta Eastern Time. 8:30 local in Calgary. And Daryl Sutter, his audio so far in this postseason has been Tortorella-esque. Not in the exuberance and the outlandishness, but more so in the comedic aspects. And Daryl Sutter, he's hilarious, unintentional or otherwise. I love hearing Daryl Sutter. And he had a couple of comments yesterday. Number one, on the Jack Adams Trophy, which he was nominated for, and deservedly so. They had a remarkable season in Calgary. I think Daryl Sutter will probably win the award. Here is Sutter on his nomination for the Jack Adams.
Well, it's not the best coach, first off. And if the coaches voted on the best coach every year, you'd see quite a bit different list the last 15 years. So the way I look at it is that I don't need that on my resume. Some guys do. So I'd rather see young guys win it, quite honest. Or guys that have maybe got a raw deal somewhere, like a guy like Girard. Got a raw deal in Florida, got a raw deal in Vegas. Well, if I had a vote, I know who I'd vote for.
Got a raw deal.
Okay. This was thrown out there last night. How much is the Jack Adams Award about the coach, and how much is the Jack Adams Award about who their goaltender is? Gallant with the Rangers. It's old Igor there, and I don't want to say his last name because I've been screwing it
just
up.
Just lose an week. S. Shesterkin.
Shesterkin.
There you go.
All right.
You nailed it, buddy. You're good.
And thank you. And Daryl Sutter. And so Shesterkin. I think I screwed up that time. Was number one goals. Okay, shut up. Moving on. Number one in goals against. Number one. Who is number three in goals against in the regular season? It was Jacob Markstrom. Daryl Sutter. And listen, it's not to take away from these coaches or the stories of these teams, but it's the same thing with who's a great coach. Well, who's their quarterback? You know, I think there's a bit of a correlation there as well. Who's going to get the nominations? Well, who was your goalie? And I think that certainly is a part of the story about who's getting the Jack Adams.
Every year, whether it's in the NBA or the NFL or the NHL, the Coach of the Year award is one of those where it's all relative to expectations, right? Let's use the NFL as an example. I bet Dan Campbell to be the Coach of the Year for the Detroit Lions. And it's a pretty simple explanation. Let's say miraculously Detroit makes the playoffs. They got all those guys in the draft. Maybe Jared Goff takes a step or, I don't know, reprises how he used to play with the Rams where he was okay. And they make the playoffs. Dan Campbell's going to win Coach of the Year simply because the expectations historically are so low surrounding Detroit. And there's a turnaround. And Calgary's a good team, was a good team last year, great team this year. And you could use the Minnesota Wild, Dean Evason, as another example, or you could use perhaps I mean, there's a number. I mean, how about John Cooper or Andrew Brunette in Florida? There's so many guys, teams, maybe not exceeding expectations, but maybe doing more with less. And I think that's when you're looking at a coach of the year, that's kind of seemingly how it always works.
I don't know if you know this. What odds did you get on Dan Campbell winning coach of the
year? Plus 5,000, so 50-1.
Okay, 51. See, what I like, it's a good bet because also, let's say they even just barely miss the playoffs. It's a feel-good story. Everyone likes Dan Campbell. Everyone feels bad for the Lions. The Minnesota Vikings could certainly regress. The Chicago Bears could be a horrible team. Green Bay might take a bit of a step back, not having Devonta Adams. Your Dan Campbell bet is a good one. Like it does make a lot of sense, and it certainly falls into a lot of the narratives that that the voters get seduced by.
I'm glad you brought up narratives because I'm looking at the comeback player of the year odds. Deshaun Watson has the third strongest odds.
No way. Right? It's
so
not going to happen.
If the Cleveland Browns go undefeated this year, Watson wins MVP. He still won't get voted comeback player of the year by the media. It is a literal impossibility for him to win. There's a better chance that Barry Sanders comes out of retirement and wins that award than Deshaun Watson wins it. There's no chance that's happening.
There's a better chance that we see what? Phil Mickelson is at the PGA Championship, and they're going to let him play 36 holes today, and then he's going to come out and win it. And not only does he get that trophy, but he also gets the Nobel Peace Prize. There's a better chance of that happening than Deshaun Watson winning Comeback Player of the Year. He could have 6,000 yards, 60 touchdowns, zero interceptions, and learns how to levitate, human flight. He creates it, and no voters can be like, I'm going to give him the award for perseverance for coming back. Zero.
I will say, Jameis Winston at 7-1 looks pretty tasty. Ooh. Tantalizing for that award. I love what New Orleans has done in the offseason with their offense. Think about, they get Michael Thomas back. They bring in Olave, the kid at Ohio State. And they sign Jarvis Landry. And they have Alvin Kamara in the backfield. I mean, it seems to me like New Orleans is loaded offensively. And if Winston's even decent, they can ring out maybe 9-10 wins. He plays all, how many games do they play in the NFL now? 18, 17?
It's 17. Eventually, it's hard to keep track. Eventually move to 18, but it is 17
so,
games.
So, yeah, Jameis Winston, that's something. The only issue is I don't like tying up money from, May until February.
Yeah,
so, but that's the only problem with a futures bet like that. But it makes
it
sense.
It is a good bet. Yeah, no, it is. That is a good bet. And, the backup is Andy Dalton and Ian Book. That is a good bet by you.
Thank you, Matthew.
You want to do it, but I do.
Coming from the host of Gameplay every weekday here on TSN 1050 from 2 to 4,
I
do appreciate your warm words of encouragement when it comes to my gambling degeneracy. Robin Lundberg from Sports Illustrated will join us on the other side. Curious to know his take from, I believe he lives in New York. How does the J. Cole story playing for Scarborough resonate for him? He's a huge fan of rap music as well, so he'll have a unique standpoint on that subject, and we'll get into the Western Conference Final, Game 2 tonight, and look back on the Eastern Conference Final, Game 2 last night between the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics. That's with Robin Lundberg from Sports Illustrated next.
You good, T-Minus?
Lots of J. Cole on the program this morning as some big news emerging yesterday that J. Cole will be suiting up for the Scarborough Shooting Stars of the Canadian Elite Basketball League. Back on First Up, Aaron Karolnik and Matthew Cause with you. Our next guest, an expert in all things NBA, but it's time to test his knowledge of the Canadian Elite Basketball League. Robin Lundberg from Sports Illustrated joins us. What's up, Robin?
Well, I mean, I could rap that song. I don't know if I could, tell you much about the league in question there. But I can tell you, the J. Cole albums and Forest Hills Drive and all that. And I think he had a flaming hoop on the cover of the last one. So it's all within the realm of, what he's been going for there.
What was your reaction when you saw that report from Shams that J. Cole was going to be suiting up in Scarborough, Ontario? And I should tell you, our studio at TSN 1050 in Scarborough. So we are in the same general vicinity. What do you think the likelihood is that we can get J. Cole in studio for an interview, maybe a performance? In your humble opinion, what are your thoughts on that idea?
Interesting. I would give it a shot. I mean, an interview, you know, if you were telling him if you're just talking basketball or something, he might be into that. The news wasn't that surprising. Well, look, first of all, it's good to be a celebrity, right? You probably get some perks that otherwise you wouldn't. I'm not saying J. Cole can't hoop, but, you know, he's getting some of these looks probably because, you know, if you're the team, you get a lot more eyeballs on your product and everything about you by having one of the most popular musicians on the planet as a part of your brand. But it's not new for him. You know, he did this last year as well. I think he played in Africa for a bit last year, right around or right before he dropped the off season. So it's not, you know, atypical for J. Cole.
Well, I was going to ask you, Robin, what you think about the Scarborough Shooting Stars, their backcourt, and do they have enough shooting for the upcoming season? But maybe we'll save that. Maybe we'll save that for near the end. I'm curious your thoughts on the opening two games of the Eastern Conference Finals. The disappointment has been both games have been blowouts, and maybe it's because of just the variance of three-point shooting. Game one, Boston couldn't hit a thing. Game two, Boston couldn't miss in that first half.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a large part of it. And I think, you know, it's not just a trend that we've seen these last couple games. I think it's a trend we've seen the last couple years, and I'm not sure exactly what you do about it. But the prevalence of the three-point shot, the explosion of the three-point shot, when one team is hot and one team is not, that can be the disparity in the scoreboard. Other things obviously play into blowouts and, you know, effort and getting to loose balls and, you know, getting to the free throw line and all these other, you know, a myriad of other things that might contribute. But I do think the biggest single factor as to why we seem to be seeing more blowouts, even between two good teams, is that the three-point shot, you know, is taken so frequently now. As far as the series itself, I think Boston's going to win the series. I think Boston's going to win the series pretty easily. You know, game one, you got to remember the factors that went into game one, aside just from three-point shooting or poor three-point shooting. Boston was ahead in that game and fell apart in the second half, which makes sense logically considering they had just played a game seven. And teams coming off a game seven into a game one, teams that win a game seven and go into a game one, historically have not played well, which again makes sense. And then on top of that, they were missing two starters in that game. So on the same rest as Miami, and with all of their pieces in place, I just think Boston's the better team. I'm not sure how the Heat are going to score consistently against the Celtics because Jimmy Butler is the only guy on that team who can really create. He can score. He can create for others. Outside of that, Tyler Hero can score a little bit, but everybody else needs to be set up, and I just don't think that's going to work against Boston's defense.
How much of that is just not having Kyle Lowry, who's been out with the hamstring, and just how much of a difference do you think he would have made if he was there? And not just there, but healthy, not like slightly limping Kyle Lowry, but the fully healthy version that we know and love here in Toronto.
Yeah, I mean, he makes a difference. You guys know, like you said, he's a winner, right? I mean, he's a competitor. He would get people into the right places. I'd still take Boston in the series, but yeah, it does make a difference when you have another player who is able to read the defense, break the defense down a little bit, get other players in the positions that they're more comfortable in, because guys like Max Strus, you know, aren't going to be making plays off the dribble. You know, they're asking a lot of Gabe Vincent right now. You know, they've just got guys. Bam Adebayo hasn't been as aggressive offensively. Maybe that's a part of the reason is because he doesn't have the same action setting him up. So, yeah, I mean, I think Lowry would make a positive difference. There's no question about that.
Looking ahead to tonight's game, and we're joined by Robin Lundberg, senior host with Sports Illustrated. Steph Curry had some comments back in 2019, Robin, about the way Nick Nurse was defending him and the janky defense, the box and one. And it's ironic that 3 years later, it's Golden State that is deploying a very similar defense against Luka Doncic, at least in game one. It was very effective. Luka was, I think, 6-for-18 from the field for just 20 points. What type of response are you expecting from Doncic in game two?
You know, I'm expecting him to play much better. And it's I don't want to compare anybody to LeBron James, right? Because when you do that, you, the way LeBron has been covered, by the way, this is a quick tangent, has made it so every great player sucks now. You know, like, because you're not allowed to lose. You're not allowed to have a bad game. You're not allowed, because we were judging LeBron on a day in and day out basis, and so many people were comparing him against Michael Jordan, so the standard got so high that, you know, he didn't get credit for getting to the finals in 2018 because he lost, you know, and all these other parts of his career. That's somebody who went to 9 out of 10 NBA finals. Think about that. We'll never see that again in our lives. But because in the media we covered that a certain way, now anytime any great player comes up short in any way, shape, form, or fashion, we just throw context out the window and they're a boom. You know, but Luka is similar to LeBron in the sense that he is the engine of the offense in every single way, where he's not only scoring, he's setting up others, he's manipulating the defense. He's not the athlete LeBron was or is, you know, cause that's just a one-on-one situation, but he's probably the closest comparison to LeBron stylistically, you know, as far as modeling their game after him that we've seen since LeBron became LeBron. And I say that because if you recall all those series where LeBron was playing the Warriors, the Cavs were playing the Warriors, you know, the Warriors are very active defensively. They, you know, they get in the passing lane, they can disrupt, they try different schemes. And James would typically not play as well, and this went beyond just the Warriors. This is a pattern for him, but he would typically not play as well in game ones. And I think a large reason for that is because he had to figure out what was coming. He had to know how to read it, how to adjust to it. So I think you're going to see that response from Luka. All right, he saw it for a game. Now he's going to know how to respond a little better. So I think you'll see a much better game from Luka Doncic. Whether that means he scores 40 points or not, I don't know. But he's going to have a bigger impact on the game.
Robin Lundberg joins from Sports Illustrated. Robin, I want to go off on a tangent, but I want to build on what you just said there. You say that LeBron James ruins it for everyone else. I want to ask you, which athlete ruins it for everyone else more? LeBron versus how we talk about all other NBA stars, or Tom Brady and how we talk about all other quarterbacks? Everyone's like, Ben Roethlisberger, what a bum. He's like near 40 and he gets hit 70 times a year. I think Brady maybe even is at that same level.
I think Brady did change the, you know, calculus for how you can age and how well you can play into your later career years. That's fair. I just don't know if the coverage around the NFL is as derogatory in a sense as it is around the NBA. You know, like, Patrick Mahomes hasn't been destroyed for the entire, you know, Patrick Mahomes played the worst half I think I've ever seen him play.
In that loss. He was horrible.
Yeah. But we haven't been talking about his legacy on end since that game in the NBA. And I really think this is a product of, you know, eras of people being so protective of their era, where the idea that LeBron was threatening my, you know, Tom Brady's kind of, he's established. He's the greatest of all time. I don't think really anybody argues that. But because LeBron has been chasing this deity, this myth in Michael Jordan, and you had so many people who, you know, Michael Jordan's a cultural hero. You have many people who grew up or came of age or their professional lives were built around covering Michael Jordan and what that meant. So nobody could touch him. So everything now is lesser than, right? Like you hear so often, oh, you know, these guys would crumble in this era, which is just ridiculous, right? And I think therefore, because of that, every game became a legacy game for LeBron. And then that was the standard that was set. So I hopefully it course corrects over time, but I think that's the difference, is just the tone of the discourse.
Robin, I was ignoring everything you said after you said that Patrick Mahomes is a one-hit wonder bust who got lucky. The only reason he won his one Super Bowl was because of a third and long to Tyreek Hill, and the guy stinks. I totally disagree with you, Robin, but hey, it's a free country. You're allowed to say what you want. One conversation that doesn't get a lot of talk up here, but I'd love to get your thoughts, is the whole NIL thing with college football, name, image, likeness, where players are getting paid. And my favorite thing about it now is seeing the established coaches getting angry. And it's Nick Saban getting salty. And then it's Jimbo Fisher, famous coach at Texas A&M, ripping Nick Saban. And to me, and I was curious your thoughts, it's my favorite unintended consequence is coach-on-coach crime going on south of the border.
You know, yeah, it's pretty funny, right? Because Nick Saban, of course, preferred the system where he won every year. That's the one that he thought was the most fair.
Yeah, shocking. Shocking. A little biased.
I think, you know, people are – change is tough. Change is tough for people. And yeah, like you said, you've got these established guys. I mean, it's kind of Saban and Dabo that have been the most vocal, I think, and those are the teams that have won the most. I can't imagine it's a coincidence. And you look at the industry that college football is, and you know, the name, image, and likeness thing has changed the game a little bit. And Nick Saban, salty is a good word for it. And I'm sure they'll figure out how to compete. And maybe in some ways he was sending a message to the Alabama faithful saying, you know, we have to compete on this same level, whatever car dealerships or whatever they got over there, that can, buy the players, as he said. Cause when he says, I think it's the connotation of his words too. Like when he says bought the players, you're thinking in terms of like recruiting violations in the past. And there's always been allegations of dirty money in college sports, right? But in this case, we're talking just simply about a new evolution of how things are done. And name, image, and likeness is now, you're allowed to do that. So
yeah.
did Texas A&M set up a bunch of name, image, and likeness deals with their recruits? Probably. I mean, I don't have probably, but that, you know, that's the playing field now.
Robin, thank you so much for doing this as always, and I want to ask you one final question before we say goodbye, because my co-host this morning, Matthew, has never heard of this television show, Boy Meets World. Do you remember Boy Meets World?
I do vaguely.
Yes.
It was on something called TGIF. And it was, you know, the Urkel character was on that, and Boy Meets World, Topanga, I think, was the girlfriend.
Topanga, that's right.
Most people of my age are totally familiar and could tell you everything. But my parents were strange, and they didn't like watching those shows, so I didn't watch them. So I don't actually have the, like, you know, I can't spit out the specific references, but as a pop culture professor of sorts, I can tell you the basics of it. I guess it's, you know, a boy is being exposed to everything and is coming of age, and he has a girlfriend crush, and yeah, it's cute and all that.
Yeah, it is. That was a very succinct explanation of the show.
Hold on, wait a minute. There's nothing cute about it. We're all guys here. We all went through that age, that coming of age, being introduced to women. It's gross. It's disgusting. There's smells. It's often sticky. Let's be honest. It's a disgusting time. It's a disgusting time.
All right, I'm going to go look for some socks up in a bedroom upstairs.
I don't know why you would say that.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Maybe it's cold there. Unseasonably cold where you are right now.
Yeah.
Thank you, Robin.
My feet are chilly.
Exactly. Yeah. Thanks, buddy. We appreciate it.
All right.
That's Robin Lundberg from Sports Illustrated. A double entendre as he left the program. Yeah. Another excellent performance from our friend Robin Lundberg.
He's great.
Matthew. Yeah, he is great. And Boy Meets World. I mean, I'm surprised at the vitriol that has been directed your way via text directly to me, DMs on Instagram, on Twitter. How does Matthew not know Boy Meets World? A lot of Topanga Lawrence GIFs? GIFs? I don't know. I still can't get that right.
GIF, or whatever.
I'm not going to ask you for any advice on how to pronounce words.
It's Jife. Come on, you idiot.
That's one thing it's not. It is not Jife. That is not how you say it.
Agree to disagree.
All right. Well, we'll be back to wrap things up for a very busy Friday morning. We'll tee up your vacation, Matthew. You're gone for 2 weeks. As of tomorrow, I'm sure you're pumped, and we're looking forward to the Warriors and the Dallas Mavericks, the PGA Championship ongoing at this very moment, and one former champ is making some waves early on Friday morning. I'll tell you who it is next.
When the sport meets world.
Thanks. Fantastic. All right. Boy Meets World theme to conclude the week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really remember how we began. You know what it was? It was talking about being a teacher at Centennial College, and you compared
right.
me to... Who did you compare
Robin
me
Williams.
To? Robin
well,
Williams.
Well, I jokingly said you were the opposite of Robin Williams in Dead Poets Society, because maybe lack of inspiration to your students, who you trash openly and on the air. So that's how it started. And then you mentioned some show called Boy Meets World. I knew the name,
Mr.
but
Feeny.
I've never seen it.
I'm Mr.
I knew
Feeny.
Nothing about it. You're Mr. Feeny. Apparently there's something called Topanga. I thought that was a town in South Dakota. And everyone on Twitter is angry at me for not knowing this show.
And rightfully so. In any case, yeah. enough Boy Meets World discussion. Let's go to the PGA Championship. That's ongoing. Ooh. Justin Thomas, 1-under through three. Very windy conditions this morning. Yeah. And Taylor Gooch, 1-under through six
Gooch.
Holes. Taylor Gooch, Future. The only native Oklahoman in the field this week. So he has got some, perhaps, you know, knowledge of the area, knowledge of the course
Local
that other
knowledge.
Players don't have. Local knowledge. That's the term I was looking for. So shout out to Taylor Gooch. It's a tough, tough handle to have. You know,
yeah,
your whole
that,
life,
that,
your
that's
last
not a
name's
good
Gooch.
One. Yeah.
Not easy. Not easy.
Not easy. We used to call that because back in the
best.
80s when you could bully people, the Gooch was the chubby kids with like the just the you know, under the chin, just the extra flesh, and we'd grab on it and yank on it. We called that the Gooch. But that's something you could do in 1986. Can't do that today. By the way, every person is special and every body is wonderful.
Hold on,
John
you
Rom.
Were you were bullying yeah. people? You were the bully.
No. I was friends with everyone. I knew, this won't shock you. I never bullied anyone.
No.
But you know, I certainly giggled at stuff.
Yeah.
John Rahm, by the way, opening pars on his first two holes. He's still plus three. 76 right now. I need him to get in the top 40 for me to win $9. Come on,
well,
John.
It does look like it'll be a much more challenging day two than it was on day one. And that bodes well for you, Matt, because John Rahm maybe only needs to fire maybe a 69 or a 70. That could get him into
nice
past the cut line, and I think the same would apply to Tiger Woods. As
yeah.
far as my level of optimism surrounding Tiger going out there and shooting 68, 69, 70, it's not good, to quote
not
Louis
good.
Domingue. Not the best.
Yeah.
Not the
not
best.
Not the best. Not Louis Domingue.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Rich Beam is 3-over through 5, and he's now down 41 spots to 119. Come on, Rich. Make that cut.
He had one too many Tito's last night. That's
yeah.
my plan tonight, as the long yeah. weekend is upon us. Do I have any Tito's left? Actually, I don't.
You don't have any food. We know that in your house.
I have no food. I only have sweet yeah. potatoes and peanut butter in my condo now. Probably need to go shopping at some point
yeah.
soon. Or order some more Uber Eats. That's far more likely than
yeah.
that. Thanks to 20 Fingers. Excellent work all week. Thanks to Slick Nick McVicker stepping in for a Rod. You can also listen to Nick's soccer show tomorrow morning right here on TSN 1050. Give me a thumbs up, Nick. All right, bang. I'll be dialed in for that. So will Carlo. Matthew, thanks for everything. Have a tremendous vacation. Looking forward to hearing the stories of Riesling consumption and German history upon your return in a couple weeks.
Check out my D-bag Twitter account, MCause56. It'll be even more, it'll be 17% more annoying than it normally is.
We're done for the week. We'll be back on Tuesday morning. That's right, Monday off. Ah, long weekend. Does it get any better than that? But for now, we say ciao. This hour of First Up, powered by Manscaped.